Blue Wire.
What's up, everybody? BJ Cruz here from Two Jabronis with a Wrestling Podcast on the Blue Wire Network. Now, those of you listening on the Fight Game Podcast and Top Rope Nation are probably and rightfully thinking, wait a minute, this is not the sultry tones of Double G, John, or Ryan, Kyle, or Justin, and I just want to reassure you that this is not a mistake. Let me fill you in. So, with ESPN and WWE teaming up to air a few classic WrestleManias on actual ESPN airwaves, and yes, that was on ESPN, not ESPN2 or ESPN News or, I don't know, the Ocho. I'm talking ESP freaking N. The wrestling and combat sports podcasts on the Blue Wire Network thought it'd be a great idea to team up and relive these WrestleManias with ESPN and, of course, with you, our fantastically faithful listeners. So, this is what we're going to do. We're going to rewatch these WrestleManias along with you, and then each of us individually is going to pick our favorite match or moments of the card and break it down, not like DX, but documentary style. Sound good? So, we're going to kick things off like ESPN did last night with WrestleMania 30 live from the Superdome in New Orleans, Louisiana. A few things to note about WrestleMania 30 before we move on to each of our favorite matches. It took place on Sunday, April 6th, 2014, with a staggering sold-out attendance of 75,167 people. This was the very first pay-per-view streamed on the then fairly new WWE Network. The card consisted of 7 matches, 1 on the pre-show, and 6 on the main card. The main card ran a now seemingly brisk 3 hours and 53 minutes. This was also the debut of the now maligned Andre the Giant Battle Royal. Get this, it was actually one of the main card matches. No pre-show for the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. Alright, I'm going to take some of The Rock's advice here and know my role and shut my mouth and throw it to one of my Blue Wire Wrestling Podcast brethren, Double G from the Fight Game Podcast, for our first breakdown from WrestleMania 30.
All right, this is Double G from the Fight Game Podcast. My favorite match moment from WrestleMania 30 is just the entire Daniel Bryan storyline. And here's why. So you have to actually go back a little bit of a ways to tell the full Daniel Bryan story, though, you know, I won't tell the full thing here, but there are a couple of tidbits of information that you need to know in order to tell this story from WrestleMania 30. So obviously, Batista versus Randy Orton was going to be the main event of that show. Bringing back Batista at this time was a big deal. He hadn't been around for, I believe, 4 years, almost 4 years. And he went to Hollywood and started to do his thing. And, you know, he's eventually in the Avengers. So bringing him back is a big deal. Randy Orton is the chosen one as the champion. Triple H and Stephanie are running the show. And so Daniel Bryan has a bunch of things, hurdles ahead of him in order to culminate the story of WrestleMania 30. But Daniel Bryan's not even supposed to be in this match, which is quite hilarious when you look back, because it was the moment, one of the moments, you know, The Undertaker and Brock Lesnar is memorable as well. But originally, Daniel Bryan was supposed to face Sheamus in just a random match on the card, kind of the 2-year anniversary of the match that kind of spiraled Daniel into being such a fan favorite when Sheamus destroyed him very quickly. And then it was supposed to be Triple H versus CM Punk, but CM Punk, he leaves after the Royal Rumble. He's very fed up with the company, and, you know, he doesn't want to do it anymore. He's just done with WWE. So Daniel Bryan kind of slides in there, and they didn't really They still didn't really have the plan for him to be in that match until about a month before the show, and then they just decided to go all in. You know, part of it was Punk left, so Triple H, that match wasn't there. And then the fans just really wanted Daniel Bryan. That storyline was working. And, you know, Stephanie will say later, like, oh, you know, we just had to listen to the fans. And really, you know, I guess that is somewhat partially true because they eventually did. But they were very much stubborn because you could see this thing coming from Bryan from, you know, months and months before. So I think the match with Triple H to kind of kick off the show after the promo with the three legends of Hogan, Rock, and Austin was a really strong match. Like, you know, if you want to see Triple H have a match where it's sort of close to, you know, what you would consider, you know, New Japan strong style, that's the match that you would look at. It's probably Triple H's last really good match at WrestleMania 2, if I'm thinking back. You know, he had the match with Sting, which was fine, but it wasn't good. It was a sort of a culmination of a weird story of WCW some, you know, several 15, I don't know how many years later, whatever. But, you know, then he'd have the match at Roman Reigns in Dallas, which was not good. It was very long, but I wouldn't call it a good match. He's had ones with Seth Rollins and Batista. I wouldn't call those matches good either. So I think this was really maybe his last really good WrestleMania match. But anyway, The storytelling in that match was very smart. You know, whatever you think about Triple H as a wrestler, and you know he's really good. I don't always love all of his matches. I think some of them he forces his style down our throat a little bit too much. But he really adapted to the style that Daniel Bryan was wrestling successfully. And so when Daniel Bryan beats Triple H finally with that flying knee, it was really the moment where you're like watching this going like, okay, I think they're going to do what I hope they're going to do. And so you go all the way to the main event, Randy Orton, Batista, Daniel Bryan comes in. Triple H had worked on the arm the whole match, so he's beat up. And it is really another, you know, just really good storytelling from WWE in putting all the odds against Daniel Bryan. You know, it's not just Batista, and it's not just Randy Orton. It's also Triple H. It's also Stephanie. It's also Scott Armstrong, the referee. And so, you know, just putting all of those hurdles up in front of Daniel Bryan made the finish of that match, which was him tapping out Batista with the yes lock, the LaBelle lock, to win the match and to win both titles, really culminated, just made that moment special. And, you know, you can look back, you know, people think that, you know, WrestleMania is always this, like, great babyface, you know, wins the whole thing. But, you know, there's many, many times where, you know, the story that they tell isn't really that, like, happy, great story. You know, I'm thinking back to, you know, John Cena beating Triple H at WrestleMania 22, to where you're like, okay, you know, they really did the right thing here. Thinking back to WrestleMania 20, which in hindsight is maybe not as great of a moment, probably not really a great moment, but culminating with Eddie Guerrero defending his title, Chris Benoit winning the title, and then they celebrate in the ring together. But, you know, you often have moments in WrestleMania with, you know, Triple H and Randy Orton, WrestleMania 25, where you're just left flat because that's the story they wanted to tell, and they want to continue that story. So really kudos to WWE for this show. It took them a while. They were really stubborn, but at the end of the day, they did the right thing. The one thing that is, when you look at this and you rewatch this back, like, Daniel Bryan is taking these nasty over the head bumps and falling on the back of his shoulders, and it's more dangerous than I remember. But then again, you know, a lot of the stuff, he had to tone down his style when he unretired, and so he doesn't do a lot of that stuff anymore, though he kind of does try and replicate some of it, which does scare me as a Daniel Bryan fan. But anyways, just want to thank Ben and Jeremy and Ryan, Blue Wire Synergy. Check out their podcast for sure. Top Rope Nation and Two Jabronis. Thanks for including me. That is my WrestleMania 30 memory.
Thanks, Double G. And now, the sort of new kid on the block for wrestling podcasts on Blue Wire, from Top Rope Nation, the legend himself, Ryan Droste, with his favorite WrestleMania 30 moment.
A third and five to the Undertaker! Brock Lesnar into the cover, hooks the leg, the streak is over!
What's going on, everyone? This is Ryan Droste of the Top Rope Nation Wrestling Podcast here on Blue Wire. You can also find my written work over at comicbook.com for CBS Interactive. And talking about one of my favorite moments from WrestleMania 30, and it's definitely, most specifically, the ending, but the Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker match from the Superdome in New Orleans. And I think when you think about WrestleMania 30, it's hard to not think of this match. Now, obviously, Daniel Bryan in the main event, getting his crowning achievement as the Undisputed Heavyweight Champion that night, is what a lot of people think of. But I think a lot of people also think about the reaction we saw from that live crowd in the Superdome when everyone saw The Undertaker lose for the very first time at WrestleMania. And one of the things that struck me watching this back here on ESPN during their replay on Sunday night, hadn't seen the match in a few years, was just how kind of disengaged the crowd was during this match. And I think some of that is just because nobody really thought The Undertaker would lose. You know, it was kind of this, you know, we perceived The Undertaker was unbeatable at WrestleMania. There was no chance he was going to lose. And on the surface, when you look back at it, you would think a guy like Brock Lesnar, coming back to WWE within the last couple of years before this, that, you know, this was maybe the guy that would beat The Undertaker. But at the same time, look, here's this guy coming in. He's 21-0 at WrestleMania, just unbelievable record. And it was getting to the point where just every year you knew The Undertaker would win, and just didn't seem like the streak was endangered whatsoever. So when you watch that match back, it really does seem like the crowd is kind of disengaged throughout the match. There's not the hype you would think throughout the match, but when we get to that finish that just completely shocked everyone, you know, Lesnar hits the F5 for the third time to get the victory. He had hit it a couple of times earlier. He had also kicked out of the tombstone. But when that three count hit the mat, I think WWE played this off perfectly. And how they didn't immediately go to Lesnar's theme song, but in fact, they just cut to different crowd reactions. You know, my wife is not a wrestling fan, but she remembers watching this show just because of the crowd reactions to this match. And they just did such a good job, you know, from the production standpoint of cutting to the different people in the crowds and getting all of the crazed reactions. People couldn't believe what they had seen with The Undertaker losing. And so that was gold. The match itself wasn't that great, but the ending and the finish was phenomenal. Nobody really knew that The Undertaker was going to lose. I guess Vince McMahon made the call himself kind of late in the day. He decided the day of the show he wanted Lesnar to go over, and nobody really found out other than the performers. And The Undertaker himself was reportedly pretty surprised when he heard that they hear Vince McMahon made the call and he was going to lose. Undertaker also had a rough go of it in this match. He legit suffered a concussion during the match, so he was out of it. He was taken to the hospital that night, stayed overnight, was released the next day. So it was a rough contest for The Undertaker. But, you know, looking back, I think one of the things that I have seen people debate is whether or not Brock Lesnar was the right guy to beat The Undertaker. And I got to tell you, I think he was. I know for a couple of years, people were saying maybe he wasn't the right guy because he was never on TV. We know Lesnar went on this several-year period, even into this modern day right now, where he just doesn't appear on WWE television, even when he is the champion, and that rubs people the wrong way. But, you know, it's hard to disagree with the fact that Brock Lesnar is an attraction, that Brock Lesnar is a huge star. And that since that moment in 2014 when he beat The Undertaker, he has been pretty much the star for WWE. So when you look up and down the card at, you know, who else was out there in 2014 to possibly defeat The Undertaker, now I guess they could have kept the streak intact for a couple more years and had someone beat him. But if you wanted someone else to beat him in 2014, I don't really see any better options, because Bryan, who was riding this massive wave of popularity at the time. He went over in the main event, won the world title, so we can't say Daniel Bryan. He had a better spot on the card. John Cena was kind of on his way out of the WWE within the next couple of years. Bray Wyatt, well, Bray Wyatt lost to John Cena. Maybe if they had booked Bray Wyatt better, he would have been a guy to beat The Undertaker. They have these kind of these characters with some mystique around them, but Wyatt lost to Cena that night. We look at the guys that were in The Shield, Ambrose, Reigns, and Rollins. The Shield was still together at WrestleMania 30. They were victorious over Kane and the New Age Outlaws. Kind of an underrated match, actually, that one is. Go ahead and watch that one back. So when I look at the names that were out there that night, Batista and Randy Orton in the main event with Daniel Bryan, there's really nobody else to have logistically defeated The Undertaker at that moment in time. We know Reigns beat him at WrestleMania a couple years later and what we thought was maybe The Undertaker's swan song at the time. But in fact, he had already been defeated. So, I mean, yeah, they could have saved it. I guess you can make the Roman Reigns argument, but we know the crowd has reacted to Roman Reigns and how the crowd reacted to Roman Reigns in that match. So would he have been the right decision? I don't really think so. So if you really wanted The Undertaker to lose and for the streak to end, I can't make a case for anyone but Brock Lesnar, regardless of how he's been booked and how much he's appeared on WWE television at the time. But since that time. But with that said, unbelievably memorable WrestleMania moment. When we see the crowd at WrestleMania 30 and how they reacted to The Undertaker losing, it's one of those great moments that will stick with us for a long time. So that said, I'm Ryan Drossi. You can check me out again at Top Rope Nation. You can find us wherever podcasts are found.
Great stuff, Ryan. Thank you so much. And now it is time for my tag team partner, my co-host, the incomparable Jeremy Loss. Jay, what do you got?
Well, up next, the maniacal prophet who spews his own brand of doctrine, Bray Wyatt versus the man who has made WrestleMania his home, John Cena. Bray Wyatt, with one thought in his mind, destroy the legacy of John Cena.
What's up, guys? This is Jeremy with Two Jabronis Pod, and I wanted to talk about not necessarily my favorite moment at WrestleMania 30, but the moment outside of those big three that really stood out to me, and that was John Cena versus Bray Wyatt. This was the first iteration of Bray Wyatt's character. He was the preacher, if you will. He had Luke Harper and Eric Rowan as his family. And to me, this was probably the most over he's been since before he was The Fiend. So for him to get into his first WrestleMania against John Cena, of all people, this was a huge moment for him. And they had the live music. Everything about it seemed like this was going to be Bray Wyatt's moment to kind of go to the next step, going over John Cena at WrestleMania, establish him as a main event star. And they didn't do that, which was extremely surprising to me and also a little upsetting, because you had the opportunity to really to put a rocket ship on the back of Bray Wyatt and shoot him to the top, the main event. But they decided to play it safe and go with John Cena. I mean, the match itself wasn't all that great. It was pretty bland, but I forgot in rewatching it how much buzz there was in the crowd during this match, how much interaction there was from the crowd. You had the crowd singing, "He's got the whole world in his hands" during the match. You had just the overall reaction to Bray Wyatt coming out. Like, the crowd popped like crazy for him. He was one of the more loud pops. And John Cena was getting heel response. People were booing him. Obviously, everybody loves to boo John Cena. But like in this match, people were really rooting for Bray Wyatt to go over. And they didn't do that. I thought they really had a chance. Like I said, they had a chance to really strap the rocket ship to Bray Wyatt, and they didn't do that. And it's something that we're continuing to see now. Like, again, with The Fiend, they had a chance to put him in the main event at WrestleMania, really establish him as a star, and they ended up going back to a more well-established, well-known main eventer in Goldberg. So it just kind of shows that when it comes to Bray Wyatt, Vince has never been fully bought in on him. Even when he was red hot as Bray Wyatt coming from NXT, I think John Cena was his second feud when he just debuted on the main roster. I think Kane was his first one. And so to have that and have that capability to be in a match with John Cena at WrestleMania, I just felt like it was a really missed, it was a really big missed opportunity. So I thought in the match, like you saw Bray Wyatt's character come out. You had the crab walk that was stunning to a lot of people. I thought John Cena sold it really well. And the family getting involved here and there, like there was the, they tried to lure John Cena to the dark side with the chair spot, just didn't work. So all in all, like I said, this wasn't necessarily my favorite moment of WrestleMania 30. There's a lot more, obviously Daniel Bryan, the Rock, Stone Cold and Hogan. And then you had the Taker match. Like those were all, memorable moments that far exceed this one. But for me, this was still like one of those moments where it's like, oh, Vince isn't quite sure about this guy. And now years later, we're still having this discussion. We're still wondering about like, is Vince ever going to trust Bray Wyatt? And this was just the start of it, because this was outside, like I said earlier, like outside of what he's doing with The Fiend, this was by far the most over he's been with the crowd, and the most the crowd has been interested in what he's doing. So that's all I got to say. Look forward to hearing what you guys have to offer with the other memorable moments.
Thanks, Jeremy. That Cena Bray feud is definitely coming full circle here at WrestleMania 36 in a few weeks, and should be interesting to see if Cena is finally ready to pass the torch. All right, I guess it's my turn. Here we go.
So, what you gonna do, brothers, when Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, WrestleMania 30, and the Superdome run wild on you, brother?
Hi again, everyone. BJ Cruz here from Two Jabronis with a Wrestling Podcast. Back to talk about my favorite moment from WrestleMania 30. This actually wasn't a match, but my favorite moment from WrestleMania 30 is the opening promo segment featuring Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, and Hulk Hogan. And here's why. So, first of all, this wasn't a match, but might as well have been counted as like the seventh match on the main card, because it ran a crisp, well, I don't know if it was crisp, but a firm 20 minutes. And obviously when you have that kind of star power in the ring at the same time, like you let that segment go and you let it breathe like a, like an expensive red wine you're about to, your pair with a beautifully seasoned steak. I had steak for dinner. Sorry to any of our vegetarian listeners out there. Big picture wise, I think this was a smart WrestleMania for ESPN to show, by the way, at least first, because of that star power, right? And so even like a casual or even a trolley fan of wrestling, well, they're going to recognize at least one of the three in Austin, Rock, and or Hogan. And those who don't follow wrestling at all will at least recognize The Rock, a.k.a. Dwayne Johnson, a.k.a. Luke Hobbs, a.k.a. Hercules, a.k.a. that dude from San Andreas, the movie. Before I get all giddy, though, about the segment, I should take a step back and acknowledge the fact that this is it's now a bit of a tougher watch, given all the stuff that's come out about Hogan over the past few years. I'm not going to dwell on that too much, and you can get to Googling if you're unfamiliar, but I feel like I had to say that up top and address it before heaping praise on this segment. All right, so first, Hogan repeatedly calling the Superdome the Silver Dome is still ridiculously funny. There's 79,000 people knew he was wrong. The entire broadcast team, Michael Cole, JBL, Jerry the King Lawler, they knew he was wrong. The cameraman knew he was wrong, and he was the one who seemingly helped correct Hogan and kind of saved him in there. And I've seen this segment probably 100 times by now, and I still cringe every time Hogan messes it up. Luckily, though, Hogan is saved again about 4 to 5 minutes into his promo by the pop-inducing glass shatter that brings out Stone Cold Steve Austin. Austin teases a little bit that he may choose to whoop Hogan's ass, but instead praises him for everything he's done for the business. One thing that stood out to me here was Austin's innate ability to feel the crowd and really play off them, as he did here, just by simply freaking listing WrestleManias 1 through 10 while the crowd chanted what after each number. That was incredible. You can actually see the wheels in his head spinning once he realizes he has a moment to connect with the audience and goes 110% with it. It's truly amazing to watch, and it was such a simple move. Then, of course, the biggest Hollywood star in the world, his music hits, the one, the only, the great one, The Rock, which obviously drew a massive, massive pop. Two things stood out to me once Rocky hit that massive stage out there. One, there's that giant-ass Brahma Bull they put on the screen. Holy crap, that thing was huge. I thought it was going to come to life and attack everyone. And then two, how much smaller Rock was back then. I mean, don't get me wrong, dude was still yoked as hell, but the size he is now, like after six more years of that 4 a.m. clanging and banging and in that massive travel gym he has, it's done wonders, I guess you could say. Rock, man, he's just so goddamn smooth on the mic, man. Like, I think he's undoubtedly the best ever on the mic, and that's no disrespect to other greats on the mic, like, you know, your Dusty Rhodes or your Paul Heymans of the world, or even Stone Cold, who was there in the ring with him. And by the way, Rock and Stone Cold making fun of Hogan's Silverdome screw-up is a legit laugh-out-loud moment every single time. It was just incredible to me how effortless it was for The Rock to, you know, play the hits, all his catchphrases, and still drop a fire promo on such a huge stage like WrestleMania 30 with probably little to no practice. And it just sounded so authentic. Like, nothing felt forced. And that's just always been a gift that Rocky's had, you know, from the beginning, or after the Rocky Maivia phase of his career. The segment ends with a beer bash, but not with Stone Cold's Broken Skull IPAs just yet. Just some good old classic Steve Weiser's. My co-host Jeremy seems destined to die on this hill that Austin barely drinks any of the beer that he chugs. And frankly, I'm not going to stand for that kind of slander. As far as I'm concerned, Austin is the goat of beer chugging. It was a feel-good moment, and just the type of beginning you'd want for such a huge WrestleMania. Vince and WWE love to make a big deal of WrestleManias that end in zeros or fives, and with this being the 30th WrestleMania overall, they couldn't have booked a more perfect segment to kick the show off with. I watch this segment whenever I need a pick-me-up, and, you know, given the current state of things in the world, we can all use a WWE Mount Rushmore of greatness pick-me-up. So, you know, if you haven't seen this segment in a while, if you didn't catch it on ESPN, definitely hop on the YouTubes or WWE Network and get to watch it. So a couple more thoughts before we sign off here. The ESPN experience was interesting in that they ran commercials in the middle of matches, so it very much felt like watching, you know, a Raw or a SmackDown. I think it'll be interesting to see what this means for ESPN and WWE, their relationship moving forward. There was that report out there about a month ago, I believe, from Dave Meltzer, that WWE was in talks to sell their pay-per-view rights to ESPN. So maybe this was a test run of sorts for that. I mean, I guess we'll see. But, you know, WWE and ESPN have already dipped their toes into the water with each other, given the fact that, you know, ESPN has given WWE their own ESPY award, and ESPN's written coverage of WWE and professional wrestling in general on their site has increased exponentially over the years, especially with this WrestleMania 30 card and Brock Lesnar ending Undertaker's undefeated streak. I remember reading articles on ESPN about that, which was kind of nuts at that time. All right, everyone, thanks so much for listening to this mega collabo roundtable of sorts from the Blue Wire Wrestling Pod Squad. We've got to come up with a better name for us. So if you have any suggestions, shoot that to us. We hope you enjoyed it no matter what feed you're listening on, but please do go show some love to the other wrestling pods on the network that you might not be listening to quite yet, especially the three shows you heard from today. You can find the Fight Game Podcast, Top Rope Nation, and Two Jabronis with a Wrestling Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your podcasts. And if you're one of our fantastic Apple Podcast users, please, please, please subscribe and rate all of these shows 5 stars. And while you're at it, follow the shows on Twitter. The Fight Game Podcast is at Fight Game Media. Top Rope Nation is at Top Rope Nation. And Two Jabronis with a Wrestling Podcast is at Two Jabronis Pod. That's two spelled out, T-W-O. We'll be doing this all over again next week after ESPN airs WrestleMania 32. So stay locked to all of our feeds, and we'll talk to you soon. Peace.